Connor, my husband, Stephen, I think, wants to fuck you.
Ooh, Chelsea, do go on.
So he... I started noticing...
I can ride Randolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
So he would always be like, oh, Connor's so funny. Connor's so funny. And I'm like, yeah, he is. And like, this was around probably October when you're doing your, is it called Spooky Jokes for Kids?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And then he'd be like, oh my God, did you see Connor's joke today? And I'm like, yeah, yeah. And then like, it just kept going on. And then I noticed he was like liking and commenting on like every single one of your pictures. And he talked about you at one point, like 3 or 4 times in a week.
Because I know that women do this when you like another girl's post. I didn't know that you're also like, let's just make sure he's not going gay for Connor McSpadden. This is a lot of internet sleuthing that you've got a lot of receipts on this.
Yeah. And then I was like, do you want to fuck Connor? Like, what's going on? And he was like, he's an attractive guy. I mean, he's very funny. I was like, okay, but what does that mean? Like, do you like, I feel like you're probably like one of the only guys I know of who he probably has a crush on.
That's really flattering to me because Stephen is very hot. He's around a lot of hot, successful people. If I'm looking at the menu of dick in Stephen Randolph's life, you know, and if I'm even in the conversation, then I'm just honored to be nominated. You know, I'm like flattered to be in the mix. And I've never really had like any like gay urges, like mm-hmm. or just like natural like inclinations. But I have, as time goes on, become more and more of just a hedonist in general, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I always hear, like, there's 4 billion nerve endings in the prostate gland. And then I'm like, I got to start putting stuff in my ass
right? Just
because I feel like I'm missing out on something.
You haven't done that yet?
I have done it because I just hated the idea that there's a gay guy out there having more fun than me. I was like, you're not keeping all the fun. You're not just going to hide all the pleasure up there. I'm going to, you know, see what it's about. But even that stuff, I mean, I can't even get fully into. Like, I have a little tiny pink butt plug that I use maybe 6 times a year if I'm really, really want to treat myself to a nice, you know, masturbation session.
So it's
alone?
And lay
out a beach towel or whatever.
What? I think we have the same one.
We probably do.
It's like a hot pink
one. It's for people that dabble in butt stuff. It's called the Dabbler. It's very small and soft.
I think that's the one I have because my girlfriend just sent me a picture of hers the other day, and I had the same one. So we probably all have the same starter pack.
We probably got the same neoprene. We're like $35. Like, that's enough I can blow on something I might not even like. My roommate got me an even bigger one that's inflatable for my birthday. It's kind of a joke. And I didn't, it's like one of these things where if you can get it in your ass, you should get a free t-shirt. Like, this thing is like fucking huge. It's like a small onion.
Did you try to put it in?
I tried to put it in and it didn't even get close. And now I'm like, how do I sell a butt plug that's 20% used? You know, it's only 20%.
Yeah.
But that part did see some action. So
any other objects since we're starting off hot?
I mean, I put a finger. I mean, the most really before I got that little pink butt plug was like a finger way back when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And that was funny because even when I did that, I felt like there was some kind of doorbell button up there that would let everyone at school know that I did that.
Yeah.
Know? It's like, it feels very like, oh, everyone's going to know. I was washing my finger for it. And like, it still kind of smells poopy. I feel like I still got a poop finger. So yeah. And then I let one ex-girlfriend fuck me with a strap on when I was 19. Cause, I was addicted to Vicodin.
Yeah.
You know, there was a lot of stuff going on in my life.
Yeah.
It just didn't value my body very much. And I was like, yeah, sure, you know, whatever. That's on your bucket list, sweetie. Go ahead.
How did you like it?
Well, it was better than hanging out with her and talking. So I can't really. I would tell you the whole story, but it's my fucking closer. So it's my 5-minute road act closer.
Me and my girlfriend, I guess we had a threesome with a guy and we both. Well, she really did the fucking with the strap on. I couldn't figure it out. And then after he left, we noticed there was shit on her pillow.
Oh, you got the ghost of Christmas past. Kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's tough. I've never had an issue with cleanup like that. But back to Steven, I will say that I would like hook up. I would like, you know, I would. I don't know. I don't know if I would like, it would be dick and ass, but I'd maybe blow a guy or do trade blowies or whatever with a guy just to say I did it, really, just because I'm, you know. I'm adventurous. I like that. What the fuck? Why not? You know? And I've always thought about it, but I'm like, it would have to be a guy that I think is good looking and respect. And that's going to be hard.
Yeah.
And then Steven, I'm like, shit, you know what? If it came down to it, I probably actually would.
So you'd have to have respect for them?
I wouldn't want some guy that would like make fun of me afterwards or like, I don't know, just, I couldn't fuck a loser. I'm like, I don't know.
You have standards.
I'm pretty discerning about the women I fuck even. So it's like, if I was going to hook up with a guy, it'd have to be, I'm like, okay, he's showered and shaved. He's got a nice job.
Yeah.
You know, he's whatever. Like he'd have to like be, I'd have to be like impressed with him as a man, you know?
Yeah. So you're pretty selective, you'd say.
As I get older, I find that I'm a lot grumpier than I am hornier, you know?
Yeah.
Like and I just don't like lying to people. I just don't like, the one thing I hate about like, you know, like hookup culture is like, I just remember where I kind of got out of it was just, I can't just like sitting around pretending that you're interested in someone's life just to like have some like fleeting physical experience with them. It's just like so empty and so kind of manipulative. And you know, I find that sometimes you leave someone with an impression you didn't mean to leave them with, and it just feels bad. And I don't like doing it. You know what I mean?
You're too honest.
Yeah, yeah. And I just, and it's real hard to find someone that's just like, hey, are you a soulless, you know, pleasure bag? You want to get down in the janitor's closet? It's like, it doesn't fall in your lap like that too. It does from time to time, but just, you know, not every day.
So do you use apps? Like, how do you find?
Never done apps.
Yeah.
I've only done 2 app dates in my life, and both times I smashed. So I'm kind of super, I want to retire undefeated.
Yeah.
I don't want to get back on because I got 100% hit ratio.
Yeah.
I was skeptical about even trying it the second time, but then, you know, we hooked up. So I was like, okay, now I still got my perfect ratio, but it just is not, I don't need it that bad. I'm not that lonely, you know?
Right.
I'm not like codependent.
You don't need to like hook up with someone all the time.
Like when
cool on your own or cool without.
Like when I think about my wife and I think, you know, if I'm like winning my Emmy or whatever, the big moment of my life, it's like, I don't give a fuck if she's there. It's like,
really?
She's got her own work thing. Yeah. She doesn't have to sit around and dote over me all the time. It's like,
oh.
I like independent the people with their own kind of shit going on, you know?
Yeah. Would you say that you're an avoidant or just like secure? If we're talking about attachment styles, you know what that is.
I'm more secure. I don't really live in a world where people are out to get me. I don't project a lot of like scheming onto the people around me in my life just because I think it's mostly not fucking true.
You're healthy.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm healthy or I'm a little naive. If you look at all my fucking astrology charts, it's like, you are, beware of hucksters because you definitely like a guy with some snake oil and a nice pitch, you know? So I've definitely been kind of taken for a ride by people in my life, but I find for the most part that it's just a better way to go about it in general to just not be cynical and just, you know, I'm like, you're cheating on me. You're an idiot. You know, I'm a catch.
I'm
6'4" and I have a great job. Like, you know?
Yeah. I love that you have such good self-worth and self-awareness, like, especially, and this is like so stupid, but like for like a comic even, or someone just in this business in Hollywood.
Well, yeah, I don't think I really had it until I started writing for TV.
Oh, really?
And then people started treating me with respect.
Ooh, tell me about that. Because I love these kind of stories when, like, everything changes for someone.
I have the perfect...
The gross? Do you have gross ones, too?
There's, like, a 3-day stretch of time where my life evolved like a
Pokemon.
Wow. I had agreed to go do these shows in Sacramento, and it was kind of like break-even money. Because I had to cancel some of them because I had to fly back to do my interview to get a job writing on a new talk show with David Spade for Comedy Central. It's like the biggest interview I've ever had in my life. But I'm like, you know what? This lady's been nice to me. You know, she worked with me on the schedule. I'm going to fly up there. I'll break even. I'll do the gigs in Sacramento. There's a great crowd up there. I always love the audiences. I get laid in Sacramento more than almost any other place in the United States. So I'm always like, hey, you know, and I usually get a lot of free drugs. It's a great town full of just working class townies that don't give a fuck about anything. They like to get drunk and piss their lives away and laugh, and they're great fun. So I'm going up there and I'm excited, and this woman is like just creepy with me. She keeps making it sexual. And she has me like staying at her house.
This is the booker?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'm getting more and more worried because she asked me at first. I'm like, okay, she's a mom, you know, it's probably going to be chill. I'll just go sleep on the couch or whatever, be very professional. And then it's just like, there's another guy named Connor on the show, and maybe we could do a photo shoot to promote the other shows in my bed where you guys
in my bed?
We're all like, it's like me and the two Connors. And I'm just like, yeah, I'm trying to fucking look at my notes, get my set together, you know?
That's weird.
I just flew into town today to do this gig for you, and now I got 30 minutes to kind of, you know, do my first fucking half hour I've done in 3 months, and now you're like bugging the shit out of me, and she keeps like touching on me and like
I hate
up
that
in my ear or whatever, and I go up and I have a great set. I was just killing, and I get off stage and I'm like, okay, the crowd is letting out. I go into the hallway and I'm like, please, somebody, you gotta help me. This crazy bitch is gonna like, she's gonna put me in a situation where, like, I don't know, I'll be sleeping in her bed and she'll crawl on me in the middle of the night. I gotta throw her off.
Yeah, because you had to go back to her place.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Ugh. I don't wanna go to a second location with this creep.
Yes, yes, that's from Oprah.
So there's this Mean Boys fan. There's a fan of my podcast there named Parker Newman. And I say, Parker, please, you gotta help me. This crazy bitch is gonna rape me. I'm fucking getting me too, brother. You gotta just let me sleep on your couch. And Parker goes, I don't know, Mom, can Connor sleep on her couch? And his mom goes, "Oh, sweetie, is that lady really trying to rape you?" And I was like, "Oh, yeah, kind of." And she's like, come on. She literally said, "We'll make some pizza rolls."
That's so, and did they?
Yes. You better believe my incel fans make pizza rolls, me and Parker Newman.
By the way, that was my favorite snack growing up.
Really?
One of them.
I didn't get that deep. I'd never had pizza rolls in the house, and I never had an N64. That was where my white privilege ended. I didn't get the platinum package.
You were comfortable going to sleep at a random fan's house?
I knew the guy a little bit. He was like a reply guy and a buddy of mine. And he's a comic. He's a funny comic. He's got a Dr. Phil podcast. So I knew him a bit, and he was like a fan of my show. So I know he'd at least be like stoked to have me.
Yeah.
Most likely. So yeah, I hung out with him all night, and I barely made my fucking flight to the airport, and I did the job interview bleary-eyed and fucking exhausted, and ended up getting it. But I went in for my first day, you know, a couple weeks later. And then there was a guy whose job it was to bring me a salad. And I was like,
That's cool. Holy shit.
That is like the amount of respect I got on the road as like a touring headliner at B clubs and one night was just fucking zero. Mm-hmm. Wait in the parking lot for 4 hours until my girlfriend gets off work so she can pay you with money out of her student loans. Mm-hmm. That's what happens at my gigs. And now there's a guy whose job it is to like, is there enough LaCroix? Do you prefer pamplemousse? So it was like when people started like, you know, hey, what do you think that we should do on the television? You know, like it's sort of like treating me with respect, I sort of was able to go, oh, maybe I'm not a piece of shit. And so I feel like sometimes, like, I'll talk to my friends and be like, oh, I just feel worthless and blah, blah, blah. And I'll feel bad.
Until someone brings you a salad.
Yeah, my
and then
advice
you're like,
is like, maybe you should try getting paid a bunch of money to write jokes. But yeah, I don't know. It's like, it makes me like kind of feel like down on myself that it took that to feel better. But I mean, that's just Maslow's hierarchy of needs, man. I mean, shit is real.
I love it. Yeah. I mean, like, that is like a distinct difference of like over the course of a few days that you obviously like can't ignore. So like, yeah, I mean, it makes total sense to me.
Yeah. And after that, I've just kind of like, I don't know. I just kind of have been doing a lot of TV stuff, but I mean, it's just hard to kind of stomach the idea of like, I'm going to go back out there and the guy's going to say, sleep in this roach infested motel and then come and hang out in this dingy, leaky janitor's closet and eat these microwave chicken strips and talk for 45 minutes for $150. And it's like, man, does anybody?
Yeah, well, it's like you're not doing it for the money.
Yeah.
Unless, like, you know, it depends on like what your situation is, obviously, like on the road and stuff.
I mean, I did it full time for like since I was like 22. And, you know, it was like,
Can I ask how old you are?
I'm 28.
Okay.
I always want to never lie about that because I've met people that have gotten older in Hollywood that have started lying about their age. And it's just this exhausting treadmill.
Yeah,
of like,
yeah.
Well,
it's like, last year they're 30.
After a lot of shady Wikipedia ticket submissions, I've gotten the birthday down 5 years. So
really?
I won't name names, but yeah.
Oh, you know someone who did that.
Yeah, and I just don't ever want to like start. Like, so I just want
to. It's like,
be,
who cares?
And I'm like, I'm old. I'm not going to make it. I'm 28. I'm going to dry it up. It's all going to
look. Do you feel that way? No.
Yeah, sometimes. What? For sure. Yeah.
You feel dried up at 28?
I'm dust, like, I think I'm like, if you look at the trajectory of things, I'm like, I don't think we're headed to the moon.
What?
I think I'll continue to work in show business, but I don't know if I'm, you know, going to be like Mr. Popular or whatever.
Really?
Do you feel like you're doing so well? Well, thank you. I mean, that's nice that you feel that way.
Yeah. Well, let's back up for a second. So where are you from? Where'd you grow up? And it sounds like from what you were talking about earlier in the sense of security that you had pretty good parents.
I always try to be grateful that I just had nice parents. I mean, they were really good. They didn't always get it right, but they always tried really hard, mm-hmm. you know? So, I mean, it was everything's like all good there. I'm from Chino, California. Are you familiar?
I've heard of it, of course, but where is it?
Kind of on the way. If you're going to Vegas, but you like got pulled over 45 minutes into the drive, you'd be in Chino.
Was Chino from the OC? Like there someone?
Was, yeah, that's
was
how
from
you explain
Chino,
it to
right?
people. Is there's a guy named Dylan, I think, from the OC that was from Chino
and
Hills.
He was like the bad boy.
Yeah,
right?
He was like the bad boy, and Chino's really not. It's a lot.
And is that like a cholo rep, Chino?
A little bit, but it's just just a bit of a melting pot. It's a small town. It's like a small Midwest town. It's like if you picked up a town from Ohio, you dropped it in Southern California. There's dairies everywhere. There's like strawberry fields and corn fields
That's
and stuff.
Cool.
So it's like semi-rural and unincorporated in parts. Even still, it's getting more and more like developed now, but it's still a little bit like country. So yeah, it was like I'm kind of like a yokel. I'm a Southern California hillbilly in a way. I'm sort of like a blue, you know.
How far away was that to Vegas?
It's like three more hours to Vegas. It's not that close. It's like it's more by like Ontario. Like if you're the 60 and the 50. And this is very interesting for people in other parts of the country.
I talk about geography every episode.
I am fascinated by meaningless neighborhoods and
Well, I was gonna say, so did you grow up going to Vegas a lot for the weekend, like with your friends for like adventures?
No, we were not that cool. We would be, throwing knives in the backyard.
Okay, yeah, that is a little hillbilly.
Throwing down some Yu-Gi-Oh cards.
What cards?
Yu-Gi-Oh cards.
Yu-Gi-Oh?
Yu-Gi-Oh? This is a perfect hot chick reaction because you don't even have a clue of what I'm talking
about. Yu-Gi-Oh?
It's a children's trading card game based on a cartoon from Japan that was popular in like the 2000s. And me and my buddies kind of brought it back at our high school and we created a bit of a Yu-Gi-Oh culture. So yeah, we played Yu-Gi-Oh cards. So yeah, I mean, just no. I mean, it was just the driest possible pussy conditions and fun. We were not going out. We went to like one party one time. We got an invite to a party, and we were just like, we're out of our depths. We don't like this. We don't drink. We're not dancing to Pitbull.
So you don't drink now?
No, I've never drank much. I've become a bit of a pothead in recent years. But yeah, I just like. I never was that fun to me, and I worked with a guy that was a big alcoholic early in my career, and I thought, oh, I'm not like fucking with that at all. So.
Yeah, it's always fascinating to me, you know, because I'm sober. Mm-hmm. When I meet people who don't really even drink that much, I just always find it interesting. I mean, I think it's very cool.
Oh, I mean, let's not act like I don't have drug problems.
Oh, okay, so you do other stuff.
Yeah, I mean, well, when I was a teenager, I had like maybe 3-4 months where I was taking too much Vicodin, so that wasn't too serious.
Oh, right. Okay.
But yeah, and you know, just smoking a lot of pot, and then just, you know, whenever I'm out on the road and there's drugs, I'm just like, you know what? I'm in fucking Stockton. Yeah. Sure. Let's do. Why not?
Yeah.
You know?
Smoke a little crack.
That's the best experience I can have in this town because I don't think the hotel has cable. So
yeah. And then earlier you were saying that in high school you had a drama department with a sketch team.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah,
is that when you started initially doing some form of comedy?
I knew I wanted to be a comedian since I was 10 years old.
Really?
I know that sounds like bullshit.
No,
yeah,
I hear stories like that. I always think it's fascinating.
I thought like
stand-up comedian?
I would often think, I don't know if it's the right move in life to go for it, but I know that's plan A and that's hope A. You know? That's like that's the best option, you know?
Did you see someone?
Yeah, I think it was just the show Seinfeld and seeing like, oh, okay, that's actually like just showing, even though it's the fakest representation of what being a comedian is like, just like, oh, it's a guy, he has a job and these are his friends and they all kind of,
and
it's
he
fine.
Kills every night.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I thought, why everybody should be listening to me, surely.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I got into more like comedy and stuff later and sort of figured out like what kind of comedy I kind of wanted to do. But immediately knew that was what I wanted to do. And I was always very ashamed of it. I thought, oh my God, that's the stupidest thing.
Really?
You suck. No one is ever going to want to see you do it. Like, but everyone's gonna make fun of you. I didn't.
But
tell
were
any-
you like a funny kid?
I mean, yeah, I thought so. But
so
it's
then,
like,
what's with the shame around it?
I just, I don't know. I've always had a lot of shame. I got molested, have a bit.
Every cutie has. Sorry.
I mean, we're very.
I knocked on wood as if that would take it away.
A couple of very molestable people. I mean, if you get us in some sailor suits, I mean, it's going to be handsy Uncle Tom.
Hello,
at the
Dolly.
Reunion.
Yeah.
I mean, hello, Dolly. So I mean, I've always had like a loud inner critic, I guess. But eventually, yeah. I mean, I went to do some open mics when I was 16 when my parents were out of town and I could sneak out of the house and I went down
in Ontario?
In Orange County, actually. Okay. I started in the Orange County comedy scene, which is something that exists. Shockingly.
How far away were you from Orange County?
About 45 minutes to an hour. Yeah. You know? So it was like about equidistant to LA. And I found a great community there with all these guys. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's funny that it's like some of us now are getting to like, you know, do some stuff. And we always kind of hoped that we could put the OC comedy scene on the map someday. Me and Robin Tran and Opiemi Olabaju and Keith Carey and Tom Goss and Evan Cassidy and Tim Groeschel and all these people, you know, and we just had this, we were all comedy nerds and we would all push each other to do better. We're all really shitty. If you didn't have new stuff every week, we looked at you like you're an asshole and we were really mean to each other. Like, oh, you bummed. You would just mercilessly torture you. So yeah, I got into a really good comedy culture, and then I was going to community college at the time and I was getting straight A's, going like, all right, I'm going to transfer to a good school. I can get
straight A's.
Yeah. And I was doing like the honors program. I was like writing papers to get like all this extracurricular shit. And then there's just one day in my accounting class where I was just sitting there and I just physically, my body got so hot, I couldn't continue sitting there and doing something that was leading to a life I didn't want. And I just dropped out and I went to Anchor Bar in Costa Mesa instead of calculus class. And yeah, I just been doing it full time ever since.
Wow. So were you was it like an anxiety attack? Like, do you think you were thinking about like, what am I doing here sitting in like accounting?
I knew that I was trying to do the smart thing and the responsible thing and set myself up. Cause I would feel guilty. It's like, you know what, man, you've had a good life. You're born in the United States of America in Southern California. You're a tall white guy with blonde hair and blue eyes. It's like, what more do you want, motherfucker? go do something worthwhile for the world. And I was into economics and I'd read all these books and I wanted to work for the World Bank and the IMF. And as I've become a comedian, I've learned that those are two of the most horrible, evil corporate that don't help the world at all. So I'm just like, I'm so glad now the way that like everything's worked out that I just was like, no, fuck it. I would never forgive myself if I don't try to be a clown. And the only time it even kind of makes sense to do that with your life is when you're young and no one expects anything from you. So I just dove headfirst into it.
So you were doing stand-up in OC, and then when did you come up to LA?
After about two, 3 years, and I started doing the road and going out to just crappy bars in like Bakersfield and Fresno and really kind of learning what comedy, the job of it is. It's like, oh, you entertain like drunks with double digit IQs for hundreds of dollars. And I was like, fuck, dude, I'm making $40. This is insane. So I got a little bit of experience there. And eventually we were like, you know what, guys, we got to get serious. We got to move to LA. And our buddy.
Who is this? You and Keith?
Me and that whole Orange County comedy crew. And our buddy Ramsey Badawi, who came into the scene a little bit after us, but was always a quick favorite of ours, found this crack house in Echo Park. And he's like, the rent is unbelievably low. There's a parking lot out. We have our own parking space. All five of us could park in the lot. We'd each get our own room. You know, my rent was like $525. We had seven people living in this house.
Was it an actual crack house? A dilapidated?
Crackheads were in there. And then Ramsey moved in and replaced them with comedians.
How did he get them out?
They just were all moving out anyway, and you know, they were following their
crack. But was it like an actual crack house?
It was not. I think it was like an active crack house at two cycles of roommates before us. And if you saw the place, I think it's like Keith used to say everything in the house was just that dirty color of coffee teeth, you know? And we would all wake up covered in ants, and we finally realized that why they would crawl all over us is because ants love to eat cum.
because you guys were just cumming so much.
If you jacked off in your bed, you would wake
up covered
in ants. Did
you ever do that thing in high school where you jacked off with a group of your friends on a cracker and the last one who was finished would have to eat the cracker?
No.
That was like something everyone did in my town.
I've not even... What episode of Jackass was that? How did I miss that? That's an unbelievably perfectly designed game. I never want to play it, but that's like incredible. I did teach my buddy how to jack off in middle school. I explained to him how to do it. And the next day he came to school and he was like... First of all, thanks for that. And second of all, almost hit my face. He was laying down and...
Did you teach him like one-on-one?
I didn't like go in the locker room and make eye contact. I said just like yank on, you know.
That's so funny.
I gave him the steps. But he almost came on his face and it was like one of the best things ever.
Well, that must have been so fun. It sounds like a little like comedy college in and of itself.
Oh yeah. And we did the Mean Boys show there, which was kind of like, we stole from a lot of like punk bands. It was kind of like little three-man late night show thing that we did. And we toured the country doing it and made a living enough to pay the rent in the crack house on Patreon and stuff. So yeah, we all got to just live in LA and go do shows. And it was great being around all those funny people. And you just like, oh, I'm doing this spot. You'd all kind of like help each other with your career and punch up your jokes and work on your ideas. So yeah, we all got a lot out of it. It was just like, it was cool for me too, as an only child, to like, you know, live with people like that. I feel like I finally had like brothers and siblings in my life, you know?
That's so cute.
It's very cute. Yeah, we're all very, love that. We get together a lot and, you know, they're still homies, so. But yeah, that was cool. And that was a big, like, that was very scary too. Like, okay, I'm 23 years old. I have no TV credits. Mm-hmm. You got to move to LA and make enough money as a comedian every month to live inside. Now, enough money is $500, but that's still kind of a lot.
Yeah, so then when did you start doing roast battle? Because that's kind of what you started doing that kind of got you going, right?
The only reason anything good that's ever happened to me in this business has happened is because of roast battle.
Yeah,
because
like when I think back to like when I saw you like coming on the scene or whatever, or like how I knew you originally, it was like from roast battle.
Yeah, I was real lucky that, I always thank Brian for just having an open door policy where, I mean, you get some crazy people and some duds and some bad battles, but it's also what allows like all the best people on the show to come into the show and anyone can go up and thrive and, you know, show. And it was like an opportunity to show everyone in LA that we were funny. That you
yeah.
know. So like my friend Fifi Dush, at the time we were doing this show down in OC, and there's a comedian named Derek Murray, who's a buddy of mine, and he's just kind of a dork. And me and Fifi just loved to shit on this guy. We loved to break his heart and roast him and teach. And I was talking like, oh, you always wear shirts with superhero logos on them because they have two identities and you don't even have one. You know, and we're just really giving them the business. And she was like, you got to do roast battle. You're really fucking aww. Yourself over. Like everyone, they'll love you. And she really encouraged me. Mm-hmm. So I did my first one with Drew Lynch.
Yeah.
And that went great.
Do you remember any of them?
I remember.
I mean, obviously.
Omid Singh, right before I went up, gave me a great joke. And it was actually the first joke I ever told on roast battle was his joke. It was, Omid has a black girlfriend, which makes Drew Lynch, he has a stutter,
yeah.
if the audience
yeah,
doesn't
yeah,
know.
Yeah,
Drew
yeah.
Lynch has a black girlfriend, making them the worst couple to go see a movie with. And so, and yeah, I'm trying to remember. I don't even want to. I'm not one of these people, like, I don't have, like, a lot of people do roast battle, like, to sit around, okay, my top 10 jokes I ever did in order, and I'm like, I forget them as soon as I do them. And
totally.
Hopefully I can laugh at them when other people tell them to
yeah,
me.
So then you started doing those how frequently?
Well, I did like a run of four, and then I just kind of got shook by it. I lost, and I was like...
Was it uncomfortable? I've never done one before, and I just never felt like I wanted to be in the position to be like made a fool in front of everyone, because I felt like there were so many things people could say about me that was bad about my past.
It hasn't gone that bad for me that many times. I'm pretty good at it, so I don't know what it's like to absolutely get your shit pushed in.
Yeah.
But I have absolutely gotten my shit pushed in four or five times in different instances. And it is brutal.
Yeah.
But when it's a good exchange, it's actually very
fun.
It's very empowering to have everyone laugh at these things about you that you're supposed to be so like protective of and secure mm-hmm. about, and to realize that you don't give a shit, and then you can take that energy and attack back, and you know, it's like it can give you a lot of confidence.
Yeah. Actually, I did it in one time in New York, but it was more of like a rap battle.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But it was like the same sort of like thing, you know.
It's hard to get that personal when you have to stick to a rhyme scheme.
Yeah, you know, but the energy of the room is like what I relate to what you were just saying.
What do you mean?
Well, like how it's like if someone throws something at you and then you go back, and just the way that like everyone's like, like it just makes it so fun.
Well, I mean, that's kind of like what it was just, here's what it turned into. It was the most like stressful and crazy time of my life because, okay, we're doing the show and it was kind of hot, but everyone was like, okay, it was like mm-hmm. sort of like, oh, the point is like you go up and there's celebrities there and everyone sees you and it's a great time. But it was kind of like, are they going to sell this as a TV show? And they finally sold the TV show.
Did you do one of those tapings?
I did two of them, but there was just fucking blood in the water immediately.
Yeah. What is that?
Like, oh shit! There's TV spots going out now.
Oh, so everyone started acting different.
Everyone got charged with this energy. Like we got it. It was a Fight Club, and you got to fight to the top. You got to get noticed.
Yeah.
So like once the news kind of broke, and I had stepped away from House Battle for a while, I was like, I can't stop kidding myself. This is the closest to any kind of a shot I've ever had at anything mainstream. I got to go back balls deep, and I got to go hard, and I got to be the best. You know.
Yeah.
So me and a lot of my friends at the time were doing the same thing. So we had this, you know, whole culture of roast battle where we're always working on jokes and, you know, writing these jokes. And I had a pretty great run where I just won like five battles in a row that were just like really good ones. I wrote really, really hard. I always overwrite. Mm-hmm. I find if you're overprepared, mm-hmm. then you just have something for everything. And
yeah.
It was so fun. And it was the first time I ever felt like accepted by a big comedy, a big cool comedy.
Yeah.
Community.
Yeah.
It's like, I felt accepted by every group of losers and comics and everybody. I love you. You guys are all nice to me in San Diego. But the first time I ever felt accepted by somebody that, you know, was like where I felt like, oh, I might, you know, have a career.
Yeah. I felt valued.
There. So yeah, it was really exciting. But the whole thing of, you gotta fucking kill your friends to get on television was like not a great vibe, I don't think, for everybody involved. And I think like now we're all older and we all think like get along thankfully for the most part, but it's like holy shit, we were vicious to each other. Mm-hmm. Like this was just such a just like piranha pit that we like subjected ourselves to. And like
and do you have to kind of detach so you don't personalize it?
Yeah, you definitely depersonalize your friends when mm-hmm. you're just sitting there. They're so fat and gay and ugly, and his teeth look like shit, and he gets fucked in the ass.
Did you feel bad? You know, did you feel bad? like having to say it and like shame people?
I'm kind of like push a T with that shit. I got ice water in my veins. I'm a real cold motherfucker. I will like after the fact, like when I battled one of my friends, one of the last ones I did, I was just tap dancing and just like twisting the knife. And I was just like, why was I doing this? Like I hated her. Like I wanted her to look good.
Yeah.
But then I became so obsessed with it. I didn't want to lose because I wanted people to like, you know, remember I was good at it. I just was like a huge dick. So yeah, like I'm just older and more mature now in general. So I mean, I think I've looked back on a lot of it, and there's some stuff, you know, you wish you'd undo. But there's only 3 or 4 jokes I think that I've ever bumped, and we always talked about it with people. And I've had jokes people told about me where I'm like, did you have to fucking tell everybody? Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. You know, so yeah, it's all good now. But it was just the super like stressful thing I think for 3 or 4 years when that was going on. Whenever like just the roast battle mania of everyone trying to step over each other to get on television. But it was also like, in a way, it was cool that it was a meritocracy. It was like, hey, fucking, why don't you go step over somebody, get on television,
yeah.
Prove it, asshole. Like, you know, you think you're the funniest dickhole at the comedy store? Go do it.
Yeah. So then from there, did you start writing for the roast, the Comedy Central roast?
I did the second season. And then I did not go to the finals, even though I won.
I meant... What do you mean the finals?
Oh, there's the tournament. Yeah,
oh, wait, no, wait. Now I'm talking about how do I differentiate between the roast of...
Oh, yeah, just the Comedy Central roast and then the roast battle. Well, the Comedy Central roast came after that.
That's what I'm saying. That like came out.
Yeah, right before I did the third roast battle, Jeff Ross saw me coming in the hallway at the Comedy Store, and you know I'd known him from roast stuff for a little bit now. And he said, it was just like a movie. It was so great. He said, hey, kid, I think I can get you a writing packet for the roast of Bruce Willis. And he goes, it's a long shot, but it's a shot.
That's cool.
Yeah, I always loved it.
And then he's like, now suck my dick.
And I was like, oh, well, you know.
Yeah.
I would have thought that Kim Kong would have got this job, not me, but I guess I'll suck his dick. Can't be that big.
Yeah, and then you got it.
And then, I sent in a writing packet, and I had to fly back from tour, and my great-grandfather, for whom I take my middle name, had just passed, so I had to go bury him with my family. And I ended up only having one day to do it, so me and Keith Carey literally sat cross-legged in my bed in my tiny, dirty room in the crack house that had just been covered in ants because it had been covered in cum, and we sat in this dirty, cummy ant soaked bed, and we ate way too spicy Indian food, and we got sick, and we wrote writing packets, and
what a memory.
I got the fucking job. Yeah,
I love that.
I was, and it was a blind submission too, so they didn't even know it was me, so that always made me feel good.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
What was your experience like writing on it?
It was the coolest week of my life. I was like shitting my pants excited. Yeah. I used to TiVo the Comedy Central roasts and then like watch them in the middle of the night and then delete them so my parents didn't know that I was watching it when I was like 11 or 10 because my neighbors would talk about them and they're just so salacious and, you know, fucked up and just... I was such a fan. So I got in and everyone was immediately telling stories about all the other old roasts. And, you know, I pulled up next to the urinal at a great writer and a comedian named Jesse Joyce. I don't know why I said Jesse Case. He's funny too. But Jesse Joyce, I was peeing next to him. And there's like those dividers in the urinals. I don't know why this is. Do you know that there's. So there's urinals and they put like a little piece
I could see that. Maybe I've seen that. Yeah.
Anyway, he says, Greg Giraldo.
He looked over?
Yeah. He said, Greg Giraldo used to grab these and go, don't you hate these things? So just like hearing stories like that just absolutely, you know, blew my mind. And I got a lot of stuff on the show. So yeah,
it was
like the coolest thing. My mom came to the show. So that was like the greatest night of my life.
So I've heard stories
childhood dream come true.
Aw.
Oh, okay. Anyway, sorry.
So a friend of mine used to write on the roast and said that the older guys used to sometimes be kind of like rude to like the new people who would come in.
Not my experience at all.
Okay.
Because I came in with Olivia Grace, another great comedian from the Orange County comedy scene. And she was great. Everyone was really supportive of her. They really, you know, liked her stuff. They were really supportive of me. They really liked my stuff. You know, everyone was nice. And my friend Vanessa Ramos had been there for a long time since the Great Giraldo days. And she was super sweet to me and really kind of like took me under her wing and explained the process to me and helped me not look like a noob. And
oh, cool.
Yeah, every single person I worked with I thought was fucking brilliant. And I mean, you know, Blaine Capatch and Frank Sebastiano, who wrote all of like, you know, a lot of Norm MacDonald's like jokes on Weekend Update and great movies, those Artie Lang movies. So it was, it was just like a comedy fantasy camp.
Wow.
And then when I did Alec Baldwin when I was writing on Lights Out, and I had to go in there after work. But yeah. The cool thing that happened there is at the after party, I have to hang on to some things that just blow. Like, if anything happens that would blow my mind when I was 14, I have to always put it on my mental cork.
Yeah.
our buddy Dave Cyrus hooked me and Keith Carey up with Triumph the Insult Comic Dog yes. cigars. And we got to smoke those. And I'm like, man, it doesn't get any better than this. I'm at the douchey members club in LA. That ever, you know,
Soho House?
Soho House. Yeah, yeah. I was at the top floor of Soho House smoking Triumph the Insult. It's like a comedy, like, weekend song. So, yeah, it was getting to work on those. I don't know if they're ever going to do another one, but it was
really?
The coolest thing. I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen shit from Comedy Central about it, but it was, the coolest thing that ever happened to me.
Was that the last one? Alec Baldwin?
Alec Baldwin was the last one.
Huh. I wonder why they wouldn't do one anymore.
I don't know. I mean, I shouldn't talk out of turn. I don't really know.
Oh, okay. So. Anyway, so then from there, you started writing on Spades?
Yeah, that was when The Lights Out with David Spade. Mm-hmm. So that was the guy that had written the Bruce Willis roast and also Historical Roast, which mm-hmm. I did right after, which was a really fun Netflix show with a lot of the roast battle writers yeah. and stuff on it. And I got to be Vanilla Ice in the Freddie Mercury episode, so that was real big for all the homies back in Ontario. They're like, dude, you made it.
Is he from there?
You're in 3 seconds of B-roll, dude. You fucking... no, Vanilla, I don't know where Vanilla is from. Okay. I think he's from Texas, actually.
Oh.
I did do an embarrassing amount of research trying to get into character for this bit that I just can't act. But, then the Lights Out thing happened, and that was, like, really fucking weird.
Mm-hmm.
That was just all, and then it was just like, okay, I'm just a bumpkin from, I grew up, and literally one of the big problems is that it smells like shit all the time because there's so many cows and there's so much cow shit and, so you just wake up and just, it's hot and it smells like shit and there's flies everywhere. And then, I remember every time I was stayed home sick from school, weirdly enough, Joe Dirt would be on TV mm-hmm. and I would always end up watching it just because it's on TBS at 4 o'clock in the afternoon all the time. And then just like seeing like this dude coming with barrettes in his hair in the morning, like, tired, like drinking a coffee. Like, oh,
Spade?
What did Kylie Jenner do today? It was an easy guy to work for.
Wait, he had barrettes in his hair?
Sometimes, yeah.
Because it got in his face?
Yeah, I don't look. I can't pretend to know how the best hair
I love that. He's so
operates.
Fucking funny.
It was so nice working for the funniest person in the room.
It's insane.
Unbelievable how fucking funny this guy is.
Yeah. I remember I went to I watched like football with like him and like a couple of people, like a friend of mine brought me and he was just like, so, my only like offstage experience really, or not, just mm-hmm. like hang out. And he was just like so fucking fast and funny just like literally. And it's like, he's one of those people who are like, oh, like there's a reason why you're like a star.
There's like some people that have like three moves in their Batman utility belt of comedy. You know? They just like, I gotta do my impression of my mom, uh-huh. or like this, tell a story. He has 560,000 fucking moves and tricks and he knows them all perfectly and can whip them all out and variate on them at any time. And he's just really a fucking like, just a virtuoso snarky guy. Like,
yeah. So,
So I just love to sit around and soak up and steal people's tricks and shit. So I just was like, it was like, so such an honor to like sit there and be scolded by this guy every day. I used to love he'd give me a lot of side eye. Like there's a joke about COVID coming over from packages, and I was like, hey, be careful, sneakerheads. The next box you open from China might be a pair of sneezies. And he just looked at me like I was a piece of shit, and then he'd go do it in the monologue and crush. Not say anything to me. he would always like to fuck with me. So
because you've done a bunch of stuff with him thereafter.
We did another show for Netflix. The Netflix after party, and I gave him some pretty bad advice about cryptocurrency. So we're talking about
you're the crypto guy, right?
Nobody wants to be the crypto guy. That's
no,
why
well,
I
noticed I when I briefly got into it, and now I'm not anymore. I mean, mm-hmm. I still have stuff, but I don't look at it every day anymore.
Yeah,
it's just sitting. And So I was looking at all these Instagram accounts, and you followed every single one of them. So that's why I said you're the crypto kid.
Yeah, maybe I should. Oh man, that's embarrassing. I feel so.
And I was like, oh, he must be really into it.
I'm embarrassed of a lot of different things that I'm into, just because I'm a white guy named Connor. I don't want to like Tyler the Creator and Bitcoin. That's not,
right.
That's
right.
A little on the nose.
Yeah.
But I mean, I felt like it's one of these things where I was starting learning about Bitcoin, and I was starting to tell my friends about it. But it was like literally from a place of like, I literally feel like, I don't know. I think I'm a smart guy. To me, it looks pretty inevitable. I'm a true believer, I guess you'd say. And I'm just like, I would feel bad if I didn't tell you anything. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? So I'm like, let me at least give you the pitch. You can ignore me. And yeah. then later you can say, fuck you for not pitching me harder.
How long ago did you invest in it?
Over a year.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and you're still holding?
Yeah.
Is that the word?
Yeah, holding. Yeah. And I still haven't really sold, but...
Did you do well with
yeah,
crypto?
Yeah, I've done really, yeah. really well.
Okay.
But, you know, I don't like to, like, I don't know, be talking well, about no it too
one,
much.
No, yeah, and also no
and
one...
I keep it in a hardware wallet, too, so I say.
Okay, cool. Yeah, no one I notice wants to... Every person's like, well, I'm not a financial advisor, but, yeah, like, yeah, no yeah. one wants to really give advice on it because I guess they don't want to be responsible.
To me, it's just like the government doesn't give a shit about your money. Like, the mm-hmm. dollar, like, the half of the dollars in circulation were printed in the last, like, year and a half. Like, that's, like, from George Washington mm-hmm. to present, half of the money out there was printed in the last, like, year
How do you
two.
Know that?
The articles and shit are, you know, okay. just, like, read about.
Is this connected to, like, economics?
It absolutely
so
is.
That's why you're good at it.
Yeah, well, it kind of makes sense. It's like if there's like half more of there 50% more of them than there were last year, it's like fuck, no wonder gas is $5 and you know the price of apples and shit has gone
yeah,
up.
Yeah, but because
store.
You studied this somewhat in school, do you think you had more of an understanding of it?
I've always been interested in this kind of thing. Like,
yeah,
I'm
okay.
a Capricorn moon, Chelsea. So
I was wondering.
I have a business flair to me. I'm pretty uh-huh. pragmatic. I'm decent with logistics, you know. So yeah, and I just like look, Bitcoin. There's only ever going to be 21 million of them. There's open and transparent blockchain. To me, it's like. It makes sense. I don't know. And I also just like to make big, stupid moves in my life. Like, try, you know, it's like, I'm going to drop out of community college and try to be a comedian. I'm going to move to LA and live in crack house and try to, you know, get to comedy.
Yeah, but
in
it
LA.
Works for you.
Well, yeah, sometimes. But, yeah. And then I'm like, oh, I can literally do some weird, like, you know, anarchist fuck you to the government. I can take all my money out of the banking system that's always treated me like shit, and I can put it in something that has honestly tripled in value since I fucking bought it. At some points, it had fucking quintupled and sextupled in value. So, yeah, it's just kind of a no-brainer, and it's too funny to me not to do it. It's like, yeah, I have all my money in Bitcoin. Why the fuck
Instead
would you?
Instead of a savings
you
know account?
Yeah, I just treat it as like my savings account.
Yeah.
And I think hopefully I'm never going to sell it. If I'm smart, I'll never sell it. So.
Right.
And I think, look, if you want to read into it, and I don't want to be Mr. Advice Guy, but just buying, like, you know, $50 a week is a very safe investment. So.
See, it's like, I don't even, do you read the charts and stuff? Is it called the charts?
I just have it.
Sorry,
I really just
don't know.
I mean, I just, like, kind of start with the, like, I bought some when I thought, like, all right, I think it's going to be going that from here, and I bought in pretty heavy, and I bought, you know, it's like 10, 14 grand is around where I was buying.
Yeah.
And then it's gone up way more since then, so I'm just, holding on to it, but if you just buy it kind of incrementally, you know, a little bit at a time when you have some, whenever you have some extra money that you don't want to lose, it's like, I got 200 bucks, I should sock it away, you know.
But why is it incrementally instead of at once?
Well, just at once, it's like if you just put 20 grand, all your money, all your life savings, you just got, your grandma died, gave you the money for the house, yeah, I've got to put it all in Bitcoin. If you did that like 3 weeks ago when it was $64,000, you lost half your money. You
know? Oh, so you're doing it when it's down.
You want to do it when it's down. You want to buy it when it's down. But if you just buy like regularly over time, then you're just getting a nice average price. And as Bitcoin trends upward in general, the amount of money that you have will trend upward in general, you know.
Josh,
theory.
Makes sense.
No. Yeah. And again, I don't even like making the pitch because I feel like I'm too stupid to make the pitch. I'm like,
no,
I can kind of understand if you wanted to like talk about how does mining work. And I'm like, I can
mining?
Kind of explain it. Oh, dude, don't even. Why did I even say it? I just can't be like, I smoked a little bit of a joint earlier. I can't
That's
talk
okay.
about computer science.
Okay, if you don't have to, but what about hacking?
What about hacking?
Yeah.
Well, it's like, I have a hardware wallet, so it's like you would have to come to my house and hold a gun to my head, like, which please don't do that. I'm a nice guy, but.
Did you used to do hacking stuff?
No, I've never like, I was never in, stolen
I was
from
into
anybody.
That in middle school.
Have you really? Who did, yeah. what did you hack some like MySpace
I hacked
pages,
into a Mexican high school computer. I just like found the IP number and password and used Telnet.
I've never heard of any of this. I mean, I guess I'm just not that hardcore.
Do you
but
remember
that's fucking
Telnet?
Terrifying. That teenagers can hack with... No, I've never... I was like on 4chan and shit, and I've never heard of Telnet. What is Telnet?
Telnet is like a processor on PCs, and it's like the blue screen, and you enter in like... it like you,
oh, like
you enter
prompt?
In commands. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean... I don't know.
Sure.
And then there was like a website when I was growing up. This was after I saw the movie Hackers. I was like really into it and wanted to do it. And there was this website called happyhacker.org that used to give a bunch of IPs and passwords for like random companies. I don't know why they had it on there. And it would tell you about commands and how to do certain things. So I just like logged in and I was in for a little bit and I like threw out a couple commands and then I like left because I was like nervous.
Yeah. That's pretty cool, though.
But it was fun.
Yeah.
I mean,
we used to go on the dark web and look at like Silk Road and be like,
"See, I'm so jealous."
Oh, dude, you could buy like an Uzi. Allegedly.
I'm so fascinated by the Silk Road. Did you use a separate computer for it?
No, we just used the Tor browser. And yeah. Honestly,
I know that.
It's like, I didn't mean to condescend you. I know you're.
But
sober
I know
now,
some so people have used separate laptops for it.
Oh yeah, there's people. There's a thing like.
But
a
I guess it's like, what's your intention?
There's
when
like
you're
a
on
flash
it.
Drive my buddy has.
Yeah.
I know a guy that has actually flipped some pretty serious weight off of the Silk Roads type stuff. And there's a flash drive you can pop into a laptop, and when you put it in there, it becomes a brand new IP address, a brand new laptop every time. And then it just completely
something
wipes
about that
you're
just
done.
Like turns me on. I mean, I'm like, I'm so into that like kind of shit.
It is.
There's
so,
something
like,
about computers that's salacious, like a sexual, like, yeah, I think it's salacious. I know the word, but like, what does it mean? You know?
Yeah. Well, I it's just
salacious
like enticing
to me sounds
and juicy
like,
and
yeah.
dirty and
salacious.
And
I relate to like a tabloid.
Yeah, it appeals to my worst urges, but you know, yeah. It's like, it's still irresistible.
Yes. Yes.
But yeah, there's a
wait. So what did you, was this the original?
Oh, sorry.
Was it the original? It wasn't the, it was it the second
2.0? It was the original Ross Ulbricht Silk Road.
Wow. Did like you watch the movie?
I haven't watched the movie, but I read the Wired article where they talk about talking them.
I loved it. And did you know that the Coen brothers?
What's up?
Do you know the Coen brothers?
Yeah,
were supposed to make a, not, do you know them? We're supposed to make a movie about the Silk Road?
Were they?
That yeah, I mean, I saw it on their like IMDb and I saw it as an announcement, but I don't, as far as I know, I don't think it's like gone into production. They might have just like sold the idea or it's in development.
It's an amazing story. This guy thinks that he kills like two people. He thinks he's ordering these mob hits and the government is totally leading him on, sending him stage photos of these people.
The article was incredible. It was such a good read.
Oh yeah.
I loved it.
And I love a true crime story. And I love people like I always like the movies about criminals because I've always liked people that say fuck you to society and just keep getting away with it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, even if they're evil, there's something so fascinating about somebody that just never, it's like one thing that, like, I don't know, I'm kind of, I really hold on to being a teenager and being childish and being myself and certain things, and I never want to do anything I don't have to do, to the point that it's like getting ridiculous at this point in my life, but I really almost never do something that I don't want to do. And when you look at these people, you ever read about the guy Colton Harris Moore who used to steal planes and he was robbing people in Santa Barbara?
What? When was that?
He took a picture of himself on on an iPod with a camera in it and sent it to the cops in 2008. He was like this folk hero. He would steal these little puddle jumpers and fly around and crash them.
Wait, so what did you see on the Silk Road?
You get to see a lot of pictures of bulk drugs, which is pretty cool when you're like a sheltered kid from the fucking yokel suburb.
And they show you like different types
of
like,
whoa, that's
strains
like a pound of heroin.
Whatever.
Yeah. You see all that? You see the big flaky piles of coke and then they've got like...
Did you get order anything?
Well, that's why I never really worried about it because I'm like, I'm not ordering anything, you
right.
know? And that's why I never had any like 6 Bitcoin I got for 10 cents because I just wasn't cool enough to
do
drugs.
Oh, yeah, at the time it was all crypto.
Yeah, if I would have just been cool enough to like want to try coke, I might have some of that leftover Bitcoin and I'd be totally saved. But, you know, what you gonna do? But yeah, you'd see like guns,
Dread
and weapons,
Pirate.
And like there's like an ebook section where you could buy like here's how to make meth or here's how to. So we're thinking about buying like one of those.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, we never really.
What's
did
disturbing it. Is like the Red Room.
Oh, like the
did
weird,
you ever see any of that?
I've never. I always keep a wide berth from that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
and I've only ever gone on the dark web to go to those drug marketplaces.
Yeah,
I know that at least there.
I know
there will
like,
be a child pornography section if there is one, and I won't click on. I don't think those places do child pornography, but
yeah. Well, no, I mean
out there
whatever
in the rest
is
of the dark,
you know,
web.
At the base of that iceberg,
I
you
don't
can
even
find
get,
anything.
That's why I never have gone to any other website because I'm like, I don't even want to
know.
In the, it's like, don't go in that neighborhood. You
right,
know?
Right.
Like there used to be like a hidden
walk around. The block.
It was called the Hidden Wiki, and it would have like a big list of like dark road websites, and you could kind of, they were separated. So I would look around there, and then there'd be some where it's like, okay, this is guy clearly pretending to be a fake hitman with a fake picture of him being tough, and like this is just like a sketchy website that probably is just going to take your Bitcoin and not give you ecstasy. So it's not really even that exciting. I mean, I'm sure like all the stuff is out there, but it's like I don't even want to be gnarly enough to go find the fucking. I mean,
yeah, I mean it's. Treading in dark waters.
I mean, spending so much of my childhood on like 4chan and like just going like looking for like you said like weird salacious like dark stuff.
It's did you see that documentary? Is the QAnon one with the 4chan guy?
Yeah. I did see that. That was a great talk.
Yeah.
And well, it was nice to see some of that culture talked about in a documentary because posting 4chan internet like I mean these it's just crazy what these people like what they bring out of each other and these just how these kind of like. little like feeding frenzy start and it just goes crazy, you know. It's always been like scared the shit out of me, you know. I'm always a little bit too like wholesome for it, you know, but it's like I kinda can't look away.
Yeah, it's fun to kind of dip in and it just makes you feel naughty.
I like to always
I'm like I want to see what's
I
going
like
on.
To have sketchy friends. I like to be yeah. in the mix. I like to have I need someone to be getting, you know, it's like, and I've always just like been attracted to like that kind of you know, just like low level capers.
Wait, what? What is a caper?
Just like a stupid like I think the statute of limitations of pet. Well, actually no, I won't talk about
okay.
that. I would definitely want to Google that.
Wait, so one of the things I want to talk to...
I'll tell you yeah. what the story's about, but I told it one morning and when I was working at Lights Out, and I basically admitted to some light counterfeiting.
Oh, counterfeiting. Was like,
Jesus Christ, what did you just say well, what that
is, yeah, work? Tell me about counterfeiting.
That's exactly what I don't want to do. Is what I was
okay, so something
which I never did, by the way. It's totally a joke.
Yeah, obviously. So printing money. So I love your style, and I love
you.
How you're very like... authentic and
aww.
I feel like and it's so funny whenever
this
I
this is a great interview. It's a total puff piece. You're just like and then you did Lights Out with David Spade and I love your style. And what are you like favorite drinks for summer?
I love that character, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
So I always think
whose purse, my wicker purse or my fanny pack.
Who wore it best?
Let's be honest.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So I always think the night before, like when I'm going to interview someone, I always like come up with a question when I'm like half asleep and I like ask it really, really well the night before. And then today I'm like really bad at it, but I want to kind of pinpoint. So like, you're one of the people who I feel like in this quote unquote comedy community who is like so themselves.
Aww,
and who is so
nice.
Yeah, and who's so like very authentic and like just open. Like I'd say like Jamar is like another example. You know what I mean?
That's a real honor to be compared in any way.
Totally. But like that is like, how did you maintain that throughout your life? Because I feel like you've probably always been this way and there wasn't any dip in between. Like for example, like I feel like when I was growing up, like I didn't give a fuck. Like I felt like I was like the coolest version of myself when I was younger. And then when I turned 15 and like quote unquote, like got more attractive and like boys started paying attention to me. Like
just
I became
complicated all that purity and grace. And
yeah.
Whatever.
And I became like a lamer version of
yeah.
myself where I started like caring what other people thought of me. I dumbed myself down. I started dressing and talking and acting different. And like
Diet Chelsea, you know, you
just, exactly. And I feel like I lost this part of me. And like, I also feel like, you know, as I got older and I'm just going to speak about my experience first. And cause I feel like you've been able to maintain whatever that is. And this is just my external impression. But, you know, as you get older, it's like, you're concerned about what other people are thinking of you. And like, you know, maybe I was like so much weirder when I was younger. I like truly like did not give a fuck. And like, I feel like there was like an element where I'm always like trying to get back to that in a sense, but it feels like something that is like a constant thing that I'm going to have to like work on. Like So,
I think you can psych yourself out at a certain point. Because
yeah.
I think everyone goes through periods where you're feeling yourself and you're not feeling yourself.
Uh-huh.
But I'm a big advocate of just like an active routine of feeling yourself in general. Just
yeah.
like put on Return of the Mac and roll down the windows and smoke a cigarette and really just think about I'm a bad motherfucker. I'm good at this. I'm good at that. And I think it's important to not kind of like lose your little spark of joy. It's just like one thing that's been like I've learned about comedy over and over and over again is that it is not worth it to do this for a living if you don't love it.
Mm-hmm.
Like it is a great job, like it is an easier job than most jobs, but to go and like phone it in and force
it
is miserable. So
right, of course. But just in terms of like you yourself, your presentation, your style, like the way that you live, like not giving a fuck and just like wholeheartedly being yourself.
You know, it's that is a lot of different stuff.
Uh-huh.
It's a lot of different like personality disorder. It's probably a little bit of the.
Do you have a personality disorder?
Well, no, I don't have a personality disorder, but I have a bipolar disorder.
Yeah, yeah. One or two.
And then because of that, you know, you're just obviously exposed to massive amounts of confidence sometimes.
Okay.
So I mean, there's a little bit of that, but I guess I've just always just tried to not give that much of a
yeah.
fuck, like, and to just, like, I think it's, like, I don't know, just, like, for me, it's always been the thing that I would most dread, like, or I'm the most afraid of doing is kind of, like, where to start, you know, like, all my material is just this, like, eviscerating the jokes about my sex life or whatever. You know, it's talking about, like, I was so, like, horrified to think that anyone would find out that I'd ever let a girl fuck me with a strap on. And then I was like,
really?
What? That means that I've got to talk about it for 5 minutes. I got to do a bit about it, you know? And then it's my best bit, you know?
Yeah.
So I think, like, don't be afraid of your shadow, of your, like, dark side, you know? Don't, like, acknowledge, like, what you want, what you're trying to do. And, you know, you don't have to be ashamed of, like, what, you know, I want to be a comedian. I want to be a comedian since I was 10 years old. So it's like, try not to, like, let go of your A1 storylines. Like, I kind of try to, I try to treat my life like I'm writing a good story. Like, what would I want to do next? How do I want this to, what can I, what's the biggest swing I can take? What's the biggest bite out of life I can take? What's the biggest fish I can land? Like, what is going to excite me, you know? And now, lately, I've been a little rut with that stuff. But try to, like, don't, like, be self-important. Like, people talk about people having, like, main character syndrome. And that's, look, people totally take themselves too seriously and make everything about them. But it's, like, have a little main character syndrome and that give a fuck about your life, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I one thing that helps me, like, stay, like, engaged in, like, romance. I love romance and women and, you know, if you're finding someone, you know. And that, so, like, if I'm caught up in that, then that just gives me a lot of passion. And then with, like, being in a career that you like, that can...
Yeah, but even like separate stuff, from like career, just like as a person,
keep the storyline going good, you know.
For but yourself. I feel like you're like cool without trying to be cool. You know what I mean?
You want? Thanks. I mean,
do you know
I
what
hope
I'm
so.
Saying?
It's, like you're really nice, and I look. I mean, I'm being humble about it, but it's like, yeah, I know I got swag. You know, I'm like a very confident guy, and I'm just like, I don't know, lady.
Were
I'm
you
insane.
Always very confident? Before the salad?
I got a lot more money, you know, yeah, a lot more confident, after the salad. But before the salad, too, I had a sack of nuts, you know, I was like, I think, like, once I'd done roast battle and stuff, that gave me, I mean, you literally go.
Does height help, too?
Club. Height doesn't tall, hurt, it doesn't
right?
hurt.
Right? Because that's a thing, too, right? Like, tall guys are like, I got this.
Yeah, and I just,
or like, tall people.
I've just at this point in my life, I've got so much proof of concept for Connor. Just walk in there, be yourself, and wing it, and it's gonna go great. That plan has crushed so many times that I'm like, why have I ever worried in my life?
Yeah, so you don't like have a you don't ever like doubt yourself. You're just like, yeah, I got it.
Not much anymore. Like at this point, I'm like, I would have to self sabotage pretty hard to fuck this up.
Yeah,
you know. So I try to just be really grateful, really enjoy it. You know, if you ever have like survivor's guilt about your life going well, it's my buddy said something to me that's really smart, which is if you feel like you know you someone deserves this more than you or someone's left, it's like you're obligated to enjoy it as much as you think they would. You know, so everything you have in life, I think you should appreciate as much as someone that would be jealous of you.
Oh, okay.
You know?
Yeah.
So, and that's where like fucking, like I said, just feeling yourself, listening to Return of the Mac and, you know, smoking cigarettes comes in. But, yeah, I don't know, Chelsea. I feel uncomfortable with these questions.
Your Instagram, like,
how
but
did
like
your dick get so big? I'm like, well, it's only 6.5, but it is pretty round in the middle.
No, like, I just like, I don't know. Just your whole vibe is just like cool. I don't know. It's just cool.
I think you're cool.
Like so your glasses, is, like your style,
well,
like I've, your poses.
That all my my poses are very fey and effeminate. So I mean, that's just kind of I don't really know.
I love the picture of you in a halter top, just like sunbathing.
Oh, thank you.
I remember when I saw that. I think it was like from a year ago. I was like, yes, I love casual cross dressing.
There used to be a little three-letter word called fun in this country, Chelsea.
Why is there not really more cross-dressing?
I used to love being a small-town cross-dresser in Chino and in Ontario.
Oh,
because
really?
People would go out and like want to get into fights with you and give you shit, and you'd go, fuck you, asshole, you know? And I could, like, you know, like I'd be walking home from school, and this isn't the fun part, but like people would throw a whole can of Monster Energy drink at me. I remember wearing some weird outfit, like leopard pants and some kind of blouse with like a dead Kennedy's patch in the back, and I was coming out of Target when I was 15, and this whole family, this Mexican family, all rolled down their windows like mom, dad, daughter, son, grandma all laughed at me. Hey, hey, hey. I remember the old lady pointing and laughing. So just like a little bit of that stuff was kind of, it was kind of like, you know, it would get you down sometimes, but it was also a little exciting. It was, you know, it was also like, I try not to be too much of a victim about it because it's like, let's not pretend that part of the reason I was putting on a dress wasn't fuck you, you know? Like it was just a, like, hey, fuck you, fuck this small town. You got to look at me, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But then just like doing it for fun is just fun too, you know?
Totally.
And now it's like if you... I feel like it's like why I've never come here in a dress or anything because I don't want everyone to think, oh, do I got to say she? It's so brave. And, and it's like, I don't want any, just don't even think about it, you know? It's
yeah.
Like, can it just be like a fashion statement, like a Kurt Cobain thing?
Totally,
you know? Like,
yeah.
Can I just like be a little fucking fruity, man. You know,
right?
Like,
I mean, no one questions Jamar's shit.
No, well, it's like, and Harry Styles or whatever has the swag, but it's
yeah.
Like,
what do you think about that?
I mean, yeah, I like it. I mean, I always like seeing guys like wearing like, you know, women's clothing or, you know, like,
yeah, it's fine.
There's not much of it for my body. There's not much women's clothing that looks
good.
Oh
yeah, because you're tall,
6'4" man. You know what I mean? So I don't do it a ton, but yeah, you know, it's fun every once in a while. It's fun for pictures, you know.
What about makeup?
Makeup, it just feels like shit on my face. I do like to wear it. I got this shit that's Aerobrush. That's like very, you can totally touch it and rub it. And it just kinda, it cleans up the ruddiness, the Irishness of my face. But I don't really like to dress up and do the whole costume thing too much. But I went to a poker game, and it's funny, I put on some makeup and I had a nice outfit. And I was wearing my hair in pigtails because it's just...
That's cute.
It's just more... I have some pictures, it looks good. But it's just more fun to hurt people's feelings in pigtails, you know? Just like as a guy, as a assigned male at birth or whatever you want to say, it's like
a little hot brat.
It's just like you're just being a little shit, and I'm a pretty funny guy, so it's like you probably don't want to go back and birth. And it's like this big guy with pigtails is bullying me, and I'm just like
I love that. Did you like Dennis Rodman growing up?
I didn't follow. I just followed the Shaq and Kobe Lakers.
Yeah, but just style wise,
I love Dennis Rodman now. And as I've learned more about what he did and what he meant culturally, I am more and more impressed with him. We see him all the time at bar shows in Orange County. He loves
County Newport Beach
and get shit faced. So we had all these Dennis Rodman stories. He actually paid my buddy Evan Cassidy's rent. He made a whole web series about it, Searching for Rodman. But he paid his rent one night. Just gave him $1,000 and totally saved his life. He tells a whole story about it, but. I was so glad I got to... He was the guy I was assigned to write for on Bruce Willis Roast. He was on the dais, and everyone else like got all these other people. And then I was kind of like, who are we going to stick with Dennis Rodman? It was honestly kind of the vibe, which I don't know if that's fair, but they were like, oh, Connor can do it. He's brand new. And they're like,
I didn't know that you did that. That's so cool. So what was that like?
I went in the trail, and it's fucking insane, man. I mean, he's... The thing that I remember most about him is that he had two flip phones in his sock. Like two like 7-Eleven burner phones in his sock, and he would like whip one out and he'd be talking.
Yeah.
It sounded like he sounded like a really nice guy, because he was like, he seemed like, oh, okay, yeah, I'll help you out. Like, he's paying for this girl's college and this girl's car payment, and his brother's got a thing. So there's a lot of that, and we had a lot of jokes about how he broke his dick.
Did he?
He broke his dick two times, actually.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's a fun Dennis Rodman fact. So I remember right before he went up
How did
stage,
he break it?
Well, having a lot of depraved sexual intercourse, okay. Chelsea. Yeah, I think that was what did
the
it.
The reason I brought
right
him
before
up
he went
is
up,
because...
I said break a dick, and he thought
that's funny. Yeah, the reason I brought him up is because for me growing up, like, I felt like he was a style icon because he was so unique and cool and flamboyant and like didn't give a fuck and did whatever he wanted. Like, I loved his hair colors and everything that he did. So
quite different cultural impact, but for me, that person was David Bowie.
Just
like, I was like, that's what I am. I'm the androgynous and above it all.
Yeah. Yeah, I was wondering who else like inspired you when you were growing up style-wise.
Oh, I mean, well, I'm a huge punk rock fan. So it was like, I'd never had any exposure to music. Then I got in the White Stripes, and then, you know, Ramones, Clash, Sex Pistols, and then everything, Dead Kennedys, Germs, all, you know, so all that kind of look, all that kind of stuff was, I was way into it. And then as I got older, I mean, I loved Kanye West. He's the singular visionary genius of our time. So I would get into a lot of stuff that I would, you know, see him wearing. And then I kind of got more into like streetwear and stuff. Mm-hmm. And now I just have a bit of everything that I kind of like I'm wearing right now.
I love those.
This is I like supporting this guy because he's kind of like on a mid to like, you know, level of fashion design. But it's a company called Bound based out of England. They have a lot of really cool stuff, really unique fabrics. I love Fear of God. This guy, Jerry Lorenzo, does these drapes. Be interesting, bold silhouette of, and I've got a ton of his shit. I mean, it's almost all I wear is Fear of God essentials, and then I like Stussy because Stussy just makes nice, affordable clothes for stylish scumbags. You know, if you want to smoke weed in the garage and hang out with people in a parking lot, and you wear some shit from Stussy, you're gonna be looking fresh, and it's like affordable. So, I've honestly, that's like been a thing. I'm thinking that I would love so much just to have my own brand to design my own clothes.
Oh,
and stuff.
That's cool.
If at some point,
what
I
kind
could
of
get
stuff?
Enough juice. I was thinking I wanted to do a line called the Liquor Store Lifestyle.
Okay.
It's designed for people like me that love to go buy bullshit from the liquor store. You know?
Yeah. So like casual.
Yeah, yeah.
Streetwear.
Yeah, and the kind of Stussy space stuff that's comfy but stylish, you know, bold, interesting. We haven't gotten all the sketches figured out yet.
I love that. That's cool. I look forward
kind of
to
a
that.
Dream of mine. Yeah, yeah.
Cool. Well, Connor, I think we did it.
Chelsea, thank you so much for having me. I'm sorry for yammering about myself the entire time.
What? That's what this is.
I mean, I saw the guest list and on iTunes, and I'm like, people are going to tune in like, oh, it's going to be a stinker. Who is this guy?
No, not at all. Love you. And of course, thank you for coming on. Bye.